Every day, we touch dozens, maybe hundreds of items made from plastic. How we use them and how we dispose of them has consequences.
The water rises up, the stuff that's here now will move downstream, and new stuff will be coming in. So we're leaving a plastic trail all the way out to the ocean.
I'm Carol Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, a look at our plastic problem. A new policy in China means an uncertain future for plastic items we're used to tossing in the recycling bin.
It's heartbreaking to say that, well, I buy my thing in that package because I think it's recyclable, and now you're telling me it's not.
And an engineer says the problem isn't plastic, it's us.
So it is a really nice material, but it's used in the wrong way.
Those and more environmental stories about plastic are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. The global market for recycling plastic has changed dramatically over the last year, and it's already trickling down to what happens with our own household recycling. If you're like me, the recycling you drag to the curb outside your house for pickup includes cans, sales flyers, soda bottles, yogurt tubs, and the clamshells that raspberries and strawberries are packaged in. I put a lot of those in the blue bin. But that's about to change.
For us, it's business as usual. We're taking everything today that we took last year.
That's Sean Weigel, Program Supervisor of Environmental Services for the City of Pittsburgh. He means the usual glass, paper, metal cans, and plastics with the numbers 1 through 5 and 7 on the container. You know, the number inside the little triangle. But
the numbers, we're going to be probably getting away from those in the near future. They're just, in theory, they work great, but they're very confusing.
That's because not all plastic is created equal. The number on the bottom of that strawberry container is number 1. That's PET, or polyethylene terephthalate. It's also a type of plastic soda and water bottles are made from. But those bottles are a lot more valuable than food containers. Bottles can be cleaned and melted down to make more bottles, or other products like carpets or park benches. That's not what happens to many other shapes and numbers of plastics. Erica Young and I are wearing hard hats and watching a parade of bottles and bags. They're moving on a belt from a pile 3 times our height to a platform where they're sorted by hand.
These bays here below the line are our residue bays. So all of that material in there is going to end up at the landfill.
We're just outside of the tipping floor of Waste Management's MRF, or Materials Recovery Facility, on Neville Island near Pittsburgh. 10,000 tons of material come through here each month. They have recycling contracts with businesses and municipalities in the region. Workers pick out stuff that could hurt the machines, materials that can't be recycled, like garden hoses. We even see a bowling ball.
Your strawberry clamshells might not be in this refuse pile, but before they get to the end baling, they will probably end up in a refuse pile. Yeah.
Young says later on down the line, the cardboard and paper material are sorted with a sizing screen. The paper rolls over the top because it's flat, but those flimsy plastic berry containers also fold flat.
So it's going to roll over top and it eventually could end up with the paper as well.
She says that's contamination. Until last year, a lot of plastic and paper recycling was sold from facilities like this one to China. But at the beginning of the year, China stopped importing most plastic waste and mixed paper, like junk mail. It has its own trash problems, and China will only accept a prohibitively low amount of contamination in the materials it still takes. That leaves sorting facilities with few options.
If we don't have a market to sell this material to, it essentially isn't a recyclable.
So strawberry containers and yogurt cups have to come out of the waste stream. Even glass has a contamination problem because in a single stream facility, bottle caps and other small items get mixed up with it. Young says Waste Management is trying to get the word out to its customers, those municipalities, that it really only wants paper, cans, and those plastic jars, jugs, and bottles with a narrower top, which they can still sell. Anne Germain is with the National Waste and Recycling Association.
We understand why China is doing this, but the timeline that they set for it was so short that it didn't allow for alternative markets to develop.
Germain says even the alternative markets in Asia, Vietnam and Thailand, are turning away foreign recycling because they're overwhelmed with the surplus. And building similar facilities in the U.S. will take time and investment. She says recycling companies are getting squeezed. The cost of doing business is higher because they have to pay to send more material to the landfill, and they're getting less money for material they can still find a market for. Those costs will eventually be passed on to their customers. Justin Stockdale is Western Regional Director of Pennsylvania Resources Council, a statewide environmental group. He says he doesn't want people to be discouraged by all of this.
It's heartbreaking to say that, well, I buy my thing in that package because I think it's recyclable, and now you're telling me it's not. I've changed my life to support recycling, and now it's all been for naught.
Stockdale says recycling still works, but it's a commodity, not just a way to deal with our trash. He says single-stream recycling, where we put all of the materials in one bin, is easier for people. But it was designed to grow the volume of the material that recyclers actually wanted, like those number one and number two plastic bottles. So what if we collected the other stuff that's gumming up the works the old-fashioned way, like we did in the 1980s, by sorting it ourselves and dropping it off at a dedicated facility?
And it may be that glass goes back through drop-off. It may be that cardboard goes back through drop-off.
What about my clamshells?
Maybe that clamshells go back through drop-off. And I think we need to think about this as an opportunity to get it right and to do better.
And as Stockdale reminds me, recycling is only one of the R's. Reduce and reuse are even more critical now, while the world market is in flux. So I could go to the farmer's market with my own container to buy strawberries, or get creative with how to reuse that plastic clamshell. I'm taking suggestions. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. Plastic is both a wonder of technology and also one of the major environmental problems of our time. Plastic garbage is turning up everywhere, massive floating garbage patches in the ocean. There are tiny pieces of plastic that end up in the food chain, including in our food. NPR's Christopher Joyce has this story of a woman who's telling the world how much plastic waste is out there and where it's coming from. This story first aired on NPR's Morning Edition on July 24th.
I met Jenna Jambeck at her office at the University of Georgia for an interview. I was not expecting homework.
So what we're going to do for the next 24 hours is to record everything that you touch that is plastic.
I'm touching something right now.
Mm-hmm. So let's write it down.
My microphone holder. It's plastic.
Yep. And your this...
You mean the tape recorder?
Yeah, the tape recorder.
A plastic ID card. The zipper on my bag.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and that was maybe 3 minutes.
This is going to be a long day.
Probably.
Jenna Jambeck started her career as an environmental engineer specializing in waste management. She's a connoisseur of garbage dumps. She's taken me to one of her favorites near Athens, a couple of hours' drive from Atlanta.
We're sitting here at a dump. I'm looking over...
Landfill.
Excuse me, at the landfill.
Jambeck grew up in rural Minnesota. There was no garbage collection. She had to borrow a truck to take her family's trash to a dump every week.
I was always pretty fascinated by going there and just seeing what I would see.
And that fascination with the stuff people throw away grew into a profession.
I fell in love with studying waste.
So there's no getting out of the fact that I'm going to have to climb up onto this landfill. Jambeck's going to show me what plastic does in the landfill, or rather, what it doesn't do.
Such a beautiful day out here.
Yeah, you could say so. The sun's shining, the vultures are flying overhead.
It's gorgeous. All right, I want to go further.
Okay. She's wisely chosen to wear green rubber boots.
I'm just going to step where you step.
What I see is a mound of dirt and muck about 50 feet high at the top, covering several acres. Trucks are dumping their loads, miscellaneous bits of trash poke up out of the ground.
I see like a living, breathing thing. This whole system is actually an ecosystem.
Microbes break down the organic garbage. Metal corrodes and dissolves. Most everything returns to the earth, except...
Plastic would be the thing that doesn't break down.
The intruder.
Yeah.
The stuff that's sitting out here is all plastic.
Yeah.
Container of toothpaste. That looks like the top of a...
Detergent bottle.
PVC pipe, that looks like. Most plastic will break down into smaller pieces eventually, but no one knows how long those pieces linger in the environment. And a lot of it ends up in the ocean. It collects in giant floating patches. People want to clean it up, And Jambek says, sure, but wait a minute. Let's find out where it's coming from.
We sort of backed up and said, well, how much do we think is actually going in? And what we can do is to keep the waste out of the ocean in the first place.
No one really knew how much plastic was washing into oceans or just where it was coming from. But in a seminal paper published 3 years ago in the journal Science, Jambek figured it out. It made a big splash. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee invited her to testify and to tell them just how bad the problem was.
Dr. Jambek, you're next.
Thank you, Chairman Sullivan, Ranking Member Whitehouse.
It was Jambek's first appearance in Congress, but she came with hard information no one else had, and it was pretty shocking.
We estimated that 8 million metric tons of plastic entered the oceans in 2010. This is equal to a volume of five...
She held up a bag full of plastic trash.
Grocery-sized bags filled with plastic for every foot of coastline in the world.
That's right, five bags for every foot of coastline in the world. Jambek says half of that waste comes from China, the Philippines, Indonesia, and Vietnam, countries with growing consumer economies but little waste management. Most of what shows up on beaches and in the ocean is single-use plastic, grocery bags, bottles and caps, straws, utensils, packaging, mostly manufactured in the West. By Jambek's calculations, in 2025, 10 times as much plastic could be going into the oceans.
It seems to be that that's going to be our footprint in this time period. Is that really the story we want to tell future generations?
Jambek is trying to change that story. She's been appointed by the U.S. State Department to be sort of a plastic ambassador who advises foreign governments on how to manage their plastic waste. She advises the Ocean Conservancy, an environmental group working to stem plastic waste. She says putting actual numbers on how much plastic waste there is has made a difference.
Now, around the world, people are reacting to that and trying to figure out what to do to have a positive impact.
Like looking for plastic substitutes for utensils or packaging, and getting people to pay more attention to what they use and throw away and what they can recycle. And getting plastic out of landfills like this one. Jambek met the man who would become her husband on top of a landfill. They were both doing research, digging into the very bottom of the landfill to see how things decompose. They pulled up an immaculate piece of lunch meat.
It was a piece of bologna.
How do you know it was bologna?
Because it looked exactly like a piece of bologna from a package.
It was a bonding moment.
We laughed at the bologna.
It's a hot afternoon, and the aroma is rising. Volatile fatty acids, Jambek explains. But then a truck arrives with a fresh load for a waiting bulldozer and compactor.
So they're going to dump, and then the bulldozer is going to come and move it, and then the compactor gets his turn to drive over it.
Okay, I don't need to wait to see all that.
Oh, you just broke my heart.
Christopher Joyce, NPR News. Oh, wait a minute. My plastic count for 24 hours. I touched 52 items. Credit card, restaurant menu, soap dispenser, my glasses, a ketchup container, an elevator button.
And that story first aired on NPR's Morning Edition on July 24th. How many plastic items do you think you touched today? There's even more plastic to come. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. Some people see the beauty in plastic. It's used in medical equipment that saves lives. It can be formed and molded to our will. So maybe we just need to be smarter about all the ways that we use it.
It is designed to last for a really, really long time while everybody's using it as a disposable.
Coming up on the Allegheny Front, the case for using plastic responsibly. Stay tuned. More and more beach towns in New Jersey and Delaware are trying to curb the use of plastic straws, bags, containers, and even balloons. But it appears most of the plastic that ends up in the ocean doesn't come from people on the beach. It comes from people living in cities far away from the sea. For State Impact Pennsylvania, Catalina Jaramillo follows the path of these plastics from the streets of Philadelphia to the ocean.
When it comes to plastics polluting the ocean, Kelly O'Day says it starts here, on the corner of West Loudoun and North 7th Street in North Philadelphia.
Now here's an example over here on the left. There's three garbage bags.
O'Day is a retired wastewater engineer who thinks one of the biggest challenges to clean water is litter. He points to the storm drain on the corner, to those openings on the curb that capture rainwater and are designed to prevent flooding. The city of Philadelphia has more than 75,000 stormwater inlets.
You get enough of a flow of water, that plastic bottle will make its way. You see the stormwater inlet over there, and there's one over there. So they wind up going to the stormwater inlet.
From these storm drains, rainwater and plastics travel underground through the sewer to water treatment plants. But sometimes, if the rain is heavy, that water and some of the plastic trash gets dumped directly into our waterways.
You can see all the white debris, that plastic bags and trash.
Street trash can end up here in the Frankfort Creek, 3 miles away, where a giant stone tunnel carries rainwater and sewage into the creek. Plastic bottles litter the bank, and plastic bags wave in the wind, cut on the tree branches that line the creek, which smells like sewage.
What will happen is the water rises up, the stuff that's here now will move downstream, and new stuff will be coming in. And if you visualize, there's a continuum along the Frankfort Creek to the Delaware River, along the Delaware River to the bay, out to the ocean. So we're leaving a plastic trail all the way out to the ocean.
Jennifer Coffey grew up in the nearby neighborhood of Port Richmond. She remembers using storm drains as garbage cans.
And I didn't know any better at the time, and I thought, oh, well, that goes to somewhere where it gets cleaned up.
Coffey now runs the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions and fights against plastic pollution.
Much of the plastic pollution comes from our individual everyday use and just not thinking about where we're putting it or thinking, oh, somebody else will take care of this. There is nobody else. We are the everybody else, and there is no way when you throw it away.
By 2050, the ocean will have more plastic than fish, according to a study by the World Economic Forum. Scientists say plastics threaten and kill birds, fish, and mammals. They get trapped in six-pack plastic holders and balloons. Researchers have found plastics in the stomachs of fish and whales. The impact to human health is still unknown. Jonathan Cohen is a professor of marine science at the University of Delaware. He's researching what's called microplastic pollution in the Delaware Bay. Microplastics are tiny bits of plastic that can end up in small aquatic life, like plankton.
So we found microplastics in our samples at every station.
Cohen's research shows that cities could be the largest source of these tiny bits of plastics floating around in the Delaware Bay and ending up in the ocean, and that the amount of plastics increases after a heavy rain.
It doesn't seem to be the increased number of people in the summer that generates more microplastics that we're measuring in the environment. What does seem to relate to the microplastics that we see is urbanization.
Microplastics often start out as things like plastic bags. Over time, they erode into tiny bits. Cindy Siff lives at the Jersey Shore and runs Clean Ocean Action, an organization that's conducted beach cleanups for the last 33 years.
Plastic bags, plastic wrappers, buckets, caps and lids.
Most of the plastics they collect are things people use once and then throw away. Siff says every year they find something new.
So, for example, the latest, newest item we're finding on the beach is these individual single-use teeth cleaners that have a toothpick on one end and a piece of floss on the other end.
Siff says she hopes people who live in cities realize that throwaway plastics can end up in the ocean.
That fork that you just used to eat that salad for however many minutes now will last for hundreds of years.
Environmentalists like Siff are adding a fourth R to the slogan reduce, reuse, and recycle. They want people to refuse plastics. Catalina Jaramillo, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
So we've heard a lot now about the plastic pollution that's all around us, from grocery bags that don't get recycled to islands of plastic floating in the oceans. But a couple of years ago, I met someone at a green products expo in Pittsburgh who's getting people to think differently about plastic's life cycle.
So what we got here is a mobile plastic recycling installation. We call it the Perpetual Plastic Project.
Bart Bleierveld is an industrial designer from the Netherlands. He drops an ordinary clear plastic cup, the kind you'd use at a party and toss out, into a shredder with a manual crank.
And by turning, you break the cup down into small pieces.
The confetti-sized pieces then go through the extruder, a machine that heats the plastic up to 200 degrees and pumps the warm goo through a small hole.
It's a bit like a toothpaste.
The end product is a long plastic wire that becomes the ink for 3D printers. Bleierveld's company, Better Future Factory, uses an industrial-scale version of this model to make and sell printer ink from old car dashboards and refrigerators. For this demo, he's feeding a spool of the filament, the recycled plastic ink, through a 3D printer. It puts down fine, hair-like layers of melted plastic in different directions and creates...
It's a heart ring. You can have it.
Thank you. Later, Bleierveld explains, though you can make just about anything on a 3D printer, the rings are part of his strategy at public events to pull people of all ages into how the perpetual plastic machine works.
I love the fact that when little kids, they walk through the steps and then 1 hour later they come back with their parents and they're going to explain to their parents what the process is like. And that's amazing what people learn and their inspiration. It's not something you can put a number to, like, or which you could sell, but it's a bit of an intangible value that you create.
The concept behind your company and this demo and what you do is the circular economy. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
The circular economy, as we see it at least, we like to make our products on the local level again. And 3D printers offer us the opportunity to do that. But we still need to bring in the materials in order to power these machines. We need to bring them from far away. So we say, why don't we use the plastic waste we already have, which we need to get rid of? Why don't we use that in order to power these local machines? We don't need to transport the products anymore. And we don't need to transport the waste anymore. So we can create a local loop, a local circle. There are different circles you can make. The first would be to reuse your plastics. For example, this plastic cup, if you take good care of it, you can use this maybe for 10 or 20 times. So that will already save you about 90% of the plastic cups you consume. Think about repairing your old products. There are some repair shops available, and especially with 3D printing, we can 3D print replacement parts for products that are broken. So we can extend the lifetime. So you would need less new products and less new materials. So recycling is actually the third step when you talk about how big is the loop.
Your company does sell printer ink. It's not really ink. It's
We call it filament.
And you sell those. They're made out of recycled car dashboards and other things, and they're used in 3D printers. So do people see more value in the final product because of where it came from? And is there a market for what you're selling?
There's definitely a market for 3D printing materials because it's getting more and more popular, and people all over the world have started using 3D printers. So there's a rising demand for materials. But there's also people that's starting to get more aware, because 3D printing is not a perfect technology yet. Half of the time your 3D print would fail. And then people start to realize, like, okay, this is already the 5th, 6th, 7th time I'm throwing away my plastic. Like, can we not do something about it? And then our material is a really interesting alternative, since it's already been recycled. And we work a lot with schools and universities that find it really important to have a more sustainable material to work with.
We all use plastic. It's everywhere. But I think when you're talking about the environment in plastic, plastic has a bad name. You know, people think of it as a negative thing. Do you feel like you're giving plastic a better name?
It is kind of funny. Like, people would think of plastic in a bad way, but it's actually a beautiful material. you can create it in all the colors that you want and all the shapes that you want. We can even make super lightweight packaging materials. For example, glass bottles are really heavy, so we save a lot of fuels by having plastic packaging. So it is a really nice material, but it's used in the wrong way. It is designed to last for a really, really long time while everybody's using it as a disposable. So if you start using it for products that need a really long lifetime, that's good. Or if you recycle it into new products and recycle it into new products and recycle it into new products, you can actually use the strength of having a long lifetime as a benefit instead of a problem.
Why is the work that you do important or meaningful to you? Like, what excites you about the work that you do?
I'm an industrial designer, and you work on new products that people can use. Yeah, so I worked at the design company before, and I made a new coffee machine and some other more consumer products and another coffee machine. But we already have so many different types of coffee machines. Why would we have a number 225 different type of coffee machine? It's not adding anything. They just want to have a new coffee machine so they can sell more coffee machines. And as a designer, at some point, it felt like, why am I doing this? Why am I make another coffee machine? Where I can use my skills to make other products that, if we then sell the products to people, it actually has a positive impact because we use waste plastics. So the more products we sell, the more 3D prints we sell, the more plastics gets recycled. It just feels good.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bart Bleierveld is co-founder of the Better Future Factory in the Netherlands. There's more at our website, including a video of the Perpetual Plastic Project machine in action. That's at AlleghenyFront.org. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show and podcast, Trump on Earth. All of those episodes are at trumponearth.org. I'm Carol Holsapel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among the Allegheny Front, WESA, WITF, and WHYY to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.